howdy-do, Who fans, and welcome to the Big Blue Box Podcast. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And welcome aboard episode 295.
One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine.
Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
But the trouble with time travel is, one never seems to find the time.
Change, my dear, and it seems on a moment too soon.
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.
I am the doctor!
For now, for this moment, I am the doctor again.
The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. And the entire planet is hurtling around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour, and I can feel it. We're falling through space, you and me.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
I could be a curator. I'd be great at curating. I'd be the great curator.
I could retire and do that.
I'm the doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years, and not all of them were good. I've made many mistakes, and it's about time that I did something about that.
Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe.
Hey, 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 Who fans. Welcome back for another week. It's episode 295. I hope you're keeping well, keeping safe and healthy, that you've hopefully had a cracking week and that you've all managed to do something Doctor Who related. Yes. Rolling into 2021 quite nicely.
Well,
I might add. The world is going into a harsher lockdown. And the president of the US seems intent on burning it to the ground. So, awesome. Welcome 2021.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one, isn't it?
I was about to say,
I can't believe it's the 13th of Jan already. Like, I'm sure I was only putting up my Christmas tree like a day ago.
We had our Christmas decks down by, I think it was like the 28th of December.
Actually, yeah. I was the same. As soon as Christmas Day was over, I was like, right, that's it. They're coming down. Yeah. Oh, it's really bar humbug this year.
Yeah, we're normally like, okay, we'll leave them up until like New Year's Eve or something, or New Year's Day, we'll take them down and all that. But we were like, no, we just can't be bothered with this. Like, let's just get it all down and just look forward to the new year and all that. So, yeah, but I jest. 2021 has been not too bad so far. We are still here. Podcasting healthy. Hopefully our listeners are still keeping safe and healthy as well, so it's not all bad. And we have some very cool news to go through this week as well, which is going to be good.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, well, one of them's fairly standard, but the other one's very cool. And then we're on to our review of Sarah Jane, so it's looking up already.
Cozy. I get that cozy feeling with Sarah Jane, don't you?
Yeah.
That cozy, oh, let's stick with Sarah Jane.
Yes. Somebody tweeted us, or I think it was a tweet or a Discord thing a few days ago, maybe a week ago, saying that they'd never considered watching Sarah Jane before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they stuck it on because I'd heard us talk about it all the time. You know, like we do all the time.
Yeah.
And he stuck it on. He was like, this is amazing. It's like, yeah, that's we funny. Know. We've been telling you that.
I do love it when people get into stuff, you know, who wouldn't have perhaps, you know, bothered before or whatever. Yeah, I've got a friend, similar thing, actually. She's started watching New Doctor Who. She's a bit, you know, I think her teacher recommended it to her. She's a piano teacher, recommended it to her. And so she started watching the new Doctor Who, which she loves. And then he said, oh, you ought to give Torchwood a go. And then she was listening to the podcast. She said, oh, I said, you keep talking about Sarah Jane. What's that then? And I said, oh, yeah, you got to watch Sarah Jane. So she's, can't remember where she found it now. She's managed to find it somewhere. Hmm. Maybe it's been added to one of the streaming services. I don't know. Anyway, and yeah, she's loving it. She said, oh, it's really good. You know, I'm so glad you told me about this. And yeah.
It's all good. Yeah. So we will say it again, because we haven't said it enough over the years. Well, the last year or but last 10 months to a year that we've been reviewing it. If you haven't seen the Sarah Jane Adventures yet, definitely pick it up and watch it. Unfortunately, yeah, it's not on any streaming services at the minute, but you can pick the DVDs up pretty cheap on eBay and stuff still.
Let me see if I can quickly find where she found it, because it wasn't a dodgy, it wasn't like a... Oh, dear. Anyway, yeah, Sarah Jane.
Yeah. I think I got my box set off eBay when we decided to review them. I was like, right, I obviously need to get them. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult to review them. Because like I said, they're not on iPlayer, they're not on Netflix, anything like that. Surprisingly, they're not on BritBox either. But yeah, I picked up the DVD box set from eBay. I think I paid £15. And that was for the whole box set, series 1 to 5. Yeah. So you can still get them. There's normally numerous copies available on eBay. There's always like about a dozen people selling one at any one time. So, yes, if you've not checked out Sarah Jane, then go and do that. And talking of BritBox, dude, it's actually the lead on to our what have we been up to. I haven't been up to anything Doctor Who, but they have added a bunch of really cool shows to BritBox in the last week.
Oh, what they added?
Yeah, so all of Wurzel Gummidge is on there.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is brilliant. So I've been watching through series one. I've 4 or 5 episodes into series one. And mate, it is such a... I know that you're a big fan anyway, but...
I love it.
John Pertwee in that is just... You know how we say that with the majority of Doctors throughout Doctor Who, they've just cast them just perfectly. John Pertwee as Wurzel is one of those casting things that you... It's like if ever there was a time to use the saying, the stars aligned, then yeah. John Pertwee as Wurzel Gummidge is, he's so, so good. And it's it's perfect. Yeah. And it's one of those shows as well that because it's such a massive nostalgia trip, it just holds like a special place in my heart, Wurzel. It's one of the very first shows that when I was a wee nipper that my dad, because my dad was always a fan of Wurzel. And when I was, one of my earliest memories is my dad sitting on the sofa watching Wurzel Gummidge and then me coming in and thinking, what's this you're watching? And then sitting down cross-legged on the floor and watching it with him. So for me, it's a huge nostalgia trip. But apart from that, it's so well made. Even to this day, it's got this, it's like beautiful simplicity about it. It's just set in sort of one or two locations, generally speaking. But it's really down to the performances and especially John Pertwee. So all of Wurzel's on there. So that's really good. So I've been going through that. They've also added things like the Demon Headmaster and...
Oh, wow.
And yeah, just a bunch of like really cool... I think they added a whole new section. It was like retro TV, retro kids TV from back in the day or something like that. So they've added loads of really good, like Cat Weasel and... Oh, wow. Yeah, just loads of cool stuff, dude. So...
Can't remember much of Cat Weasel. I know the name, and it's really popular, isn't it? And I can picture him. He's the Crowman guy, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't remember much about Cat Weasel. Wurzel's brilliant, though. I did a Wurzel watch along recently, and of the Christmas special, which is not one I watch that often because it's a Christmas set, but it's so good. It's like got little songs in it, and like it's just so much fun. And like you said, the production is great. You know.
Yeah, it's good. It's very, very good. So yeah, so there was Yeah, so I've just been watching through a few bits and that really, and they've still got a load of other very cool things on there, which I dip into, like they've got Vicar of Dibley and All of Only Fools and just loads of cool stuff. Yeah, so I haven't watched any additional Doctor Who other than Sarah Jane, but yeah, I did watch a bit of Pertwee over on Wurzel. Have you been up to anything Who related?
No, I've been sort of hovering over getting BritBox. It's funny, though, because most of it I've got on DVD. I was looking at the list of stuff thinking, oh, some really good stuff on BritBox. And But then I was looking, thinking, I own most of this already. But the thing is, there is something great about having it at your fingertips, isn't there? Just having it all there in one place, not having to go and find it. And, you know, so yeah, I was tinkering over that. But yeah, Doctor Who related, because it was William Hartnell's birthday the other day, I thought I'd watch a Hartnell, because I love Hartnell. I think he's a great Doctor, as you know. And I was thinking, which one haven't I watched for a while? Because I have been dipping into the Hartnell era quite a bit recently. So I plunged into Planet of Giants, which is one that I haven't watched in ages. And I have a feeling the reason I haven't watched it is because I think it was on our schedule. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it sort of jumped around. I think it was on the schedule and then we've sort of changed it and it got bumped back and then it got bumped back again. And I'm pretty sure that story has jumped around our schedule for quite a while. I'm sure it, because I was even thought we might have reviewed it at one point. I think actually maybe we did finally get around to reviewing it, but we haven't, have we? It's still one that we've got to review, I think. Planet of Giants, yes, we haven't reviewed it yet. And I don't think it's on the schedule this year, but it definitely was at one point. So I remember sort of gearing up to watch it. But
what is that? Then, is that early on in the run? Is that series?
It's the two? Series two, I think. Is it the first one in series two?
Oh, it is. Yes, yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, you are correct. Yeah, we haven't done that yet.
No, we haven't. No, but I'm sure it was on the schedule at one point. So anyway, I watched that. I won't talk too much about it because we haven't reviewed it yet. But I'm looking forward to getting around to that when we do. So yeah, a bit of Hartnell, bit of classic Who. Just love that TARDIS team, to be honest, mate. Doesn't matter what story it is. I just having Ian Barber and the Doctor and Susan on the screen is enough for me. They're just hilarious together. It's fantastic together. Got the latest Doctor Who mag with its lovely Roger Delgado master cover, but once I got into it, it seems to be full of all this football nonsense. I don't know what's it called, Doctor Who World Cup or something.
Football,
I was like,
what's all this nonsense?
I'm not a fan of football, so I've kind of flicked through that and thrown that on the side very quickly. It's a shame actually, because the cover's great. I'm really looking forward to this issue. It's a really nice bit of artwork. I think, I'm not sure if Lee Binding did it. I think he submitted it and then they added a few bits to it or something, I think he said. But anyway, nice cover. And if you like football, great. And yeah, that's been pretty much it, really. Haven't really done much else. I saw there was a couple of filming pics floating around on Twitter of 13 on a beach with it's probably a spoiler, isn't it? With a returning classic monster. I'm sure if you've seen the pictures, you know what I'm talking about. I won't say it, actually, just in case. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone. Gosh. Nearly did as well. But yeah, saw some filming pictures. All I'll say is, gosh, it looked like a really rough day on the beach. It looked like it was absolutely peeing down. The wind was blowing. I feel sorry for this particular artist that was in, I'm not going to say what monster it is, but in the makeup must have been running. Jodie's wrapped up in a massive duffel coat of her hair blowing everywhere. And God, it looked like a nightmare. So I think they were filming on Barry Island, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's quite an open space, as I said, quite that's why there's a lot of filming pictures floating around, because it was obviously a very public place. But you've seen the pics, right? You know what I'm talking about.
I have, yeah. And I wasn't too concerned, because I imagine that they'll probably, for the first few seconds of the shot, they'll probably fill it with maximum height, big chunky white text. It's probably
what
good.
What is that text?
The font choice is weird. It's
very weird.
Actually, there was something we didn't pick up on when we reviewed Revolution last week. What did you think to the Star Wars reference at the beginning?
Oh, yeah, I wrote that in my notes and completely forgot to say it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit cheesy.
A bit cheesy, yeah.
But I wondered what you thought of it, because I wonder if Gary finds that funny, or if he thinks that's a nice little nod, or I wonder if he's sat there groaning, like, what was your reaction?
I just didn't think it landed very well.
I wonder what you'd make of it. I meant to ask you.
A few people have said that I've spoken to as well. They're, instead of the audience being like, oh cool, this is a Star Wars reference, everyone was like, oh, it's okay, they've tried to do okay, moving on. And then
I was probably distracted by, because straight after that they followed it with that massive text font that you were talking about, and I was like, what the heck? Like somebody making Doctor Who on YouTube. I'm like that when I'm trying to find a font. I'm just like, when I can't be bothered, oh, that'll do, like massive font. There's so actually there was loads of things. I mean, our review was 2.5 hours. We were only going to do an hour, but we just had so much to talk about. And even then, after we finished reviewing it, there were so many things I'd sort of remembered that I wanted to talk about and forgot. And one, just a quick one, very quickly, one that I did think of was that one note I made was that the Doctor's trapped in jail, and I thought the Doctor never even tried to escape. She seemed to be just resigned to the fact, oh, well, I'm in prison now. And like, if that was Pertwee's Doctor, he'd have been tinkering around and making a little gadget. I was thinking, the Doctor's just occurred to me, was she just planning to stay there forever? Had she just given up? Because there was, if Barrowman hadn't turned up, if Jack hadn't turned up, she would have just still be there. What?
Probably, you
know,
yeah. I mean,
yeah, yeah. She could, you know, she's waking up every morning. Hello, camera six. Hello, weeping angel. Here's my little mate, Pating. I was thinking she's quite happy being in space jail. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, just one of those little notes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I wonder if that was a longer game plan, perhaps, because I'm pretty sure there was a moment when she's in the cell and she says something like, come on, stay strong. You've got people waiting for you, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wonder if she knew that somebody was going to come eventually. And if they didn't, then she might.
Yeah, but the Doctor shouldn't be relying on other people. This is what I mean about the Doctor being not being a strong incarnation. The Doctor doesn't wait for someone to break them out of jail. They do things to get out.
Yeah.
She should have been plotting. Anyway, not going to get into that, but that's just another little scene that I got to talk about last week.
No, Regia. No, Regia. Rightio, let's land her and do a bit of news.
Yeah, let's see what the news is.
Rightio, some viewing figures then for Revolution of the Daleks. Because they hinted at what they were last week, but now we've got the final official, the official rating, which takes into account all of the people that viewed it on the night, plus those who recorded it and then watched it within 1 week of it being broadcast. So I think the initial figure was like 4.something million at the time.
Yeah.
So taking this into account, it's now jumped up and it has, it was viewed by 6.25 million. viewers. Which is not too shabby. Pretty good.
No, that's pretty good. Yeah. Yes.
And this rating confirms, because people were saying the same thing, like, ooh, is this going to overtake a certain program? And it did. So it beat off EastEnders, which had 4.36, and Mrs. Brown Boys with 4.87 as their final viewing figures. So overall, it was the second most watched program of the day.
That's pretty good, isn't it, actually?
Yeah, Coronation Street was just ahead of it with 6.39. And then for the whole week, it will roughly finish around the eighth most programme for the entire week. And I think that was behind. There was a big old, so the Happy New Year thing, which was on, you know, the BBC do the whole, normally do the big fireworks display in London and, you know, all that stuff. So that was watched by nearly 10 million people, as you would expect. So, but it does put it on par with what Spyfall got the previous year. So that was the eighth most watched programme as well. So not too shabby figures there, dude. 6.25 in the end. So not too bad, really.
No, that's very respectable. I mean, I would expect a slight increase because obviously we're all trapped indoors at the minute. So you'd hope that people would be watching it, but no, that's very, yeah, very respectable. And I think that's a lot more, isn't it, than didn't Resolution only get like, I don't think Resolution did that well. I remember thinking the overnight or the end rating for Resolution the previous year wasn't that great. It's like the lowest rated special ever or something. So I think this, I don't know, this seems to me like quite a good healthy figure for Who, which is nice. And I'm sure a lot of it's because we were trapped indoors, but hopefully it's brought some new people on board that might want to tune into Series 13 after watching it.
Hopefully. Yeah.
I mean, Mrs. Brown Boys used to be a big ratings hit, didn't it? I mean, I've never really got into that, but that used to be a big one for the BBC, and that's for that to only get a 4.87 in comparison is, I think it's very healthy, which is good.
Loser. Get out, loser.
And as for EastEnders, don't get me started on it.
Oh, God.
Yes. And who watches it? Who wants that misery in their house? Oh, no, I've started. No. Anyway, yeah, I'm just glad it beat. Yeah, I can't bear the soaps. They make me angry. Yeah, I'm pleased with that, dude. I think it's good. It is good. Moving on to another bit of news. Mr. Eccleston, obviously, we know he's returning to Big Finish. And I did get to see that interview with him in the car park on Lorraine.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
I did. Yeah, yeah. It's quite funny, wasn't it? He really does get defensive in that, because you can see Lorraine's building up to asking him about returning, and you can see his sort of back starts arching up. He's like, I know what you're going to say, and no, I'm not going to return till hell freezes over and all that. But anyway, he is returning in audio form, and we've got a little bit of an update. So the Ninth Doctor Adventures, they've revealed some very nice artwork for it, which is good. It's called Ravagers.
Yeah.
Ravagers, yeah, this first part. It's due for release in May this year, so only a couple of months away. God, I remember when this was announced and thinking, God, March. May next year. God, that's so far away, and already it's creeping around. So, joining Chris Rapperson on his first audio odyssey through time and space are Camilla Beeput as Nova. Great name. Who is Camilla Beeput? Do you know?
No, not heard that name before.
No, a gallery chef from the Spear of Freedom, enlisted by the Doctor to stop a dastardly plan, and Jane McKenna as Audrey, the oldest gamer in Freedom City, although there may be more to her than meets the eye. Ooh. It's available now exclusively from the Big Finish website for $19.99 on download, and I think it's $24.99 possibly for CDs. Three stories in this set: Spear of Freedom, Catalysm, and Food Fight. that sounds interesting. Chris has said, quote from Chris, "It was lovely coming back to play the role again due to Nicholas's writing. I was surprised at how very quickly I seem to recall the choices I made 15 years ago. It was an odd experience, the Ninth Doctor still hanging around." What does he mean by that?
I think he means...
he's already decided never to leave.
Yeah. I was surprised how very quickly I seem to recall the choices I made. I think he means like from a character point of view.
Right.
You know, all those little things that made up his version of the Doctor. So I think he's kind of like, I think he's saying it didn't take me very long to sort of get back into the swing of being the Doctor. I think he's what he's saying there.
Get back into it. Ready for the 60th, please, Chris. Nick Spriggs said it's been an honour working with Chris again. It's truly thrilling to hear him in studio, inhabiting the Ninth Doctor like he'd never been away. Writing and directing Doctor Who stories never gets old for me, and I'm so excited for people to hear what we've been up to. It's been a delight to kick off the Ninth Doctor's adventures with Chris, and I know that my fellow writers and directors are cooking up some great stuff for the next box set. Wow. So it's sounding pretty good. This is available. It's going to be four volumes. This is just the first volume that's coming out in May. It's going to be on collector's edition CD, digital download, and limited edition gatefold triple LP vinyl. My goodness. that's tempting, isn't it? I don't know what the price is. You can order them as a bundle as well, so that saves a little bit of money. And the vinyls are strictly limited to 1,000 pressings per volume. They're $35.99. I suppose for a vinyl, it's not too bad. I haven't pre-ordered this yet, but I will be. I'll probably, as much as I'd love to get the vinyls, I've got to be careful with the old cash. But I'll definitely be ordering the CD, and I expect you'll be getting the download, won't you?
Yes, I will be. So the CD is £25. The download is £20. And if you want the limited edition vinyl, that will be £35.
What do you think of the artwork? Because they made quite a big thing about unveiling this. It's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah, Tom Webster doing the artwork for this. Yeah,
nice.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it does look pretty good.
Kind of striking.
Yes, rather striking indeed.
Mm.
Yeah. So when's this out? May. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, not long.
Not long to go. I think this is going to be a popular download for these guys. I think so many people are looking forward to having Chris back on the back in the chair. Best way to put it, I suppose. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully this doesn't tank, because if all of the waiting around for Chris to come back and do the Doctor and all the hype and stuff like that, if this tanks, then yeah, that's not going to. I think by doing this, I know he said that he'll never do TV, but you never know remember, he said he would never do conventions, he would never do all that stuff. And then lo and behold, he's back, he's doing conventions, he's doing all fan stuff, and now he's back playing the Doctor, albeit in an audio adventure, but never say never. So I think if this gets a really good reaction and people go nuts for it, it could be a stepping stone to the 60th. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know with Chris, do you?
Yeah.
You never know.
Right, so there we go. That's news wrapped up. That's the official viewing figures for Revolution of the Daleks, 6.25 mil, and Chris Eccleston returns as the Doctor at Big Finish. We must stress that. We don't want to annoy Chris. We must specify that he is returning as the Doctor at Big Finish in an audio play. Absolutely not on TV. Because I know he listens. I don't want him to. I'm not looking forward to that email, trust me.
He's listening in his car as we speak.
Yes.
The engine is running.
Yes, but all said and done, on a serious note, it is great that he has at least stepped into the Doctor's role in audio. You know, it's going to be cool. So before we crack on with our review, remember to subscribe to this podcast on whatever app you get your podcast on, or just do a search for the Big Blue Box Podcast. You'll find us on any of those apps. Give us a subscribe. That way you won't miss a show when it lands every Friday. Every episode is on our website as well, which is which is www.bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk. All of our episodes are on the website. Plus, there are links to go off to those various podcast apps and whatnot. And we also have a very cool, awesome team of writers that put out their own reviews and articles and opinions and all that stuff. So go and check those out as well. There's loads of that stuff on the website there. And we're on the socials too, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Just do a search for the Big Blue Box. And we have a free Discord server too. There's a link on the website to go over that. So come and hang out with other Doctor Who fans.
Indeed.
Yes. Right, buddy. Review time. What have we got?
So, yes, as we said, Sarah Jane this week, and it's a story called Lost in Time.
The tapestry of time is a fragile thing. But you understand that, don't you, Sarah Jane?
How do you know my name?
Oh, I know a great many things.
Who are you, and what do you want?
I need your help to save the world. This is a time window, Sarah Jane.
Then how do we get back?
There is no choice in the matter. Until the sands run out, or this world is doomed.
So this is like 1939 or something.
7th of June, 1941. Now keep your voice down.
Why, what are you looking at?
Germans.
Nazis.
Is this Buckingham Palace?
It is the Tower of London.
At last, I have you trapped.
We had best find more suitable attire for the Queen's new lady-in-waiting.
What year is this?
1889. No such thing as ghosts, you say.
Ta-da!
We cannot keep the time window open much longer.
Is it? 8 o'clock, that's it. That's when they say it starts.
If Sarah Jane and her friends do not return soon, they'll be trapped in the past. Forever.
That great scene.
Lost in Time was first broadcast back on the 9th of November in 2010, and the second part went out the following day on the 8th of November. It was written by Rupert Late, directed by Joss Agnew, and stars the normal Attic crew, but definitely minus Tommy Knight.
Oh.
Or Mr. Smith in this one. So no Luke.
Oh, yeah.
No Mr. Smith. Yeah. So literally just the three of them and a reasonable size supporting cast. And the story for this one is there's a guy called the shopkeeper who puts out a fake ad to lure Sarah Jane and the guys there because he needs them to sort of go on a bit of a quest, really. And so the guys go through the time hole and they get separated. They end up in different time zones, and they all three of them have to sort of do their own little thing to get the I think it's called the chrono steel that makes up the sort of combined thing that the shopkeeper needs to close the time hole. The chrono steel. So each of them have to bring back one item, which they identify as a little bit of a hiccup towards the end, but it gets solved relatively quickly with Sarah Jane. So, Lost in Time, dude. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I enjoyed this one, and it's probably the most, I think it's the most adult story from Sarah Jane Adventures we've had so far. It was quite a serious one, this. I don't really mean this as a criticism, but it was perhaps missing a little bit of the fun that we sometimes get in Sarah Jane Adventure. But that's not to say it wasn't good, because it was. It just didn't have as many sort of sparkling sort of one-liners or gags being cracked by Clyde. It was more serious in tone, but it was a good story. I thought the pre-title sequence of episode one, so before the titles kicked in, we got this scene which sets up the story. It almost starts mid-adventure where Sarah Jane and Clyde and Rani turn up and meet this shopkeeper. He's got a parrot, which I instantly loved. And he does this three click of his fingers and they're in the time portal and we're off. And the credits kicked in and I thought, wow, what a great intro. I'm like into this story straight away. Once we get into the actual story, I thought part one takes a little bit long. I mean, it takes its time. I wouldn't say it was boring, but a little bit slow in places. But it was good. It set up the story, and then episode two really sort of kicked in and resolved it all nicely. But it was good. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say, as I said, it was missing the sort of a bit of the fun for me. It was more of a serious story, but I enjoyed it. And I thought the production values were fantastic in this one. And I also saw all of the cast pretty much, not just the main cast, but I thought the supporting cast were excellent in this. Everybody seemed to be really taking this story seriously. I mean, it's got a real different tone to it. If you compared this to an episode of Sarah Jane from series one, for example, which was almost a little bit too kiddie at times, this one is playing it absolutely straight. And I thought it was a good story, a very good story. The standout for me, though, in this one is actually Clyde, Anthony. He just gives a really, really good performance in this. There's a bit where he does a speech to the Nazis where he's saying, all you guys want to do is control and hate. And he really steps up to the mark in this episode. And he's given a good little sidekick with George as well. Those two guys work really well together. So some nice moments in it. Great performance for cast, brilliant production. Another cracking episode, I thought, with Sarah Jane. As I said, maybe just a little slow in episode one to get going. I did find myself wanting it to pick up a bit, but it picks up nicely in part two.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm kind of with you on that one, dude. Agree with what you're saying there. It's I definitely noticed a more adult tone to this one.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I think that's a case of just a natural progression for our characters, though, because when I was doing some research looking around for a decent image from the episode to use for our social stuff early on in the week when we asked people for reviews, I was looking through various pictures of Sarah Jane, and I found a couple of pics of Clyde and Rani way back in like the beginning of series two. And I know not a huge amount of time has passed, but they do look so young in those initial pictures. And when you consider what they look like now in this episode, I think just how tall they've grown, and just how mature they now seem. So I think it's a natural progression for those guys to not be so, I know it was still a CBBC thing at this point, fully aware of that, but there has to be a certain level of progression in maturity, I guess, because you can't, otherwise you end up in that situation that we have. And it tends to be with American programs the most, where you have things like Saved by the Bell and some other programs like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but like Power Rangers and things like that, where they cast people that are in their mid-20s, like they're supposed to be in high school.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And otherwise,
are you telling me Screech was in
Screech? So otherwise you get into that territory where even kids start to sort of latch onto the fact that, you know, these guys look like more like adults than they do kids. So in a long-winded way, I think that's why it feels a bit more mature. So back in like the earlier series, like as we were going through series one and two, for sure, it was very much like, Clyde was the funny man, wasn't he?
Cracking one-liners. Yeah, giving the gags.
Like all the time. And Rani, she wasn't really... I think she was meant to be the more level-headed one after Maria left. But she was still very, you know, not very wise in the ways of what was going on and stuff. But I think now that they've travelled through space and time quite a bit since then, and they've been around Sarah Jane and stuff, they do have this more adult confidence about them and a bit more, you know. And when you mix in the actual more mature themes in the story as it is, so dealing with racism and with the Nazis and pure historical stuff with Lady Jane and it's quite dark as well. And so the three of them sort of get separated and they have their own, like I said, their own little adventures to go on to bring back the Chronosteel. So Sarah Jane's is probably the darkest of the three because her one centers around two kids being killed in a house fire. So that's that was quite dark. I remember as soon as you later on in episode two, when you see the Sarah Jane's companion, quote unquote, I suppose, for that part of it, when she's able to go into the room, when she can physically touch the key and she can go into the room, you see that little lad lighting matches and, you know, lighting the candle and stuff. I was like, oh God, this is how these kids die. They basically burn themselves to bloody death in the room. So the story as a whole is a lot more adult in theme, like you were saying. But then the actors themselves seem a lot more mature all of a sudden, just in the last episode or two. And so, yeah, I'm glad you picked it up, mate, because that was the main theme that I took away from it was it still felt very Sarah Jane. Don't get me wrong. It still felt very.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it felt like any other Sarah Jane episode, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's certainly not a criticism. I don't mean it as a bad thing that it's darker in tone. It's like you said, it makes for a nice change as well, you know. It really sort of throws you in and pulls you into the story, but it's definitely one of the more serious Sarah Janes. But yeah, it's not a criticism. I think it works very well. You're still very much in the Sarah Jane universe, and you're right about the progression, because when Clyde and Rani are separated from Sarah Jane and thrown into their own stories and their own battles, they really, as I said earlier, like with Clyde and Rani as well, they really step up to the plate. They've been through so much with Sarah Jane. I think Clyde even says it, doesn't he, to the Nazis, like, you don't frighten me. I've dealt with like bug-eyed monsters, and I've dealt with bigger guys than you, which of course he wouldn't be able to say earlier on in the series. But there is a confidence to those characters that's grown, that they feel they are able to deal with stuff without having Sarah Jane hold their hand all the time. So that's what I like about the story, is that they are split up right from the start of the story. They get sent to their own little adventures, and three quite interesting adventures as well. That's the other good thing about the story, is that each little story that they're in is really interesting, what's going on. So you've got like Lady Jane with the Rani and all that stuff, and that's a lovely setup for Rani. She's, you know, great little story for her. You've got Clyde trying to stop the Nazis in this little village church. And again, the adult sort of tone to that is, I mean, there's some language use, which I was genuinely shocked to hear in Sarah Jane. So they use the word Negro at one point, the Nazi calls him Negro. I did not expect to hear that in Sarah Jane. Just I don't know. It just, like, as I said, very sort of adult sort of script, and it's dealt with and handled very, very well. Then you've got Sarah Jane, obviously, with the, you know, the two kids that are going to get trapped in a burning room. It's all very sort of adult stuff, but it's still handled extremely well. It's not clunky. It's all very much in the sort of safe Sarah Jane universe. So although there's brilliant moments of peril, and I think I'm with you in the sense that the bit that I was really, I suppose if you want to say like on the edge of your seat, but you know, the bit that was really like got me leaning forward was when the kids are trapped in the burning room and Sarah Jane can't grab the key because it's just, it's almost like a sort of ghost key that she just can't, get a hand on. So Emily has to do it. So there was that sort of moment of, come on, get those kids out of there. And it's, you know, it's, so there's good moments of action and peril in it as well. It kept me very invested in what was going on. And also the ending as well. I thought, because they've obviously got to get these three different, you know, segments. So there's like the sword, the key, and what's the other one? Sword, the key, and...
It was the... Clyde one, which was the cross, wasn't it? It was the...
Oh, yes, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got those three segments. You think, well, obviously they're just going to get them and then the story's going to end and it's all going to be tied up neatly. But then what happens is, as Sarah Jane's going, Emily grabs the key. She comes through the portal. And you think, oh, so I thought what they were going to do is, I thought, well, they'll probably just throw the box with the other two segments through the portal and that'll be it and it all gets tied up. But no, then we get this sort of almost blink moment when this old granny turns up with the key and, you know... she had been told to go to that exact spot at that exact time. And it was a nice little twist to the story, although it's kind of been done before. It still worked for me. And I was thinking, well, how would she know what time to send that granny to? But then of course they bring in the newspaper clip from the beginning of the episode, which would have had the date. And I thought, oh, that's a really nice way of like explaining that story, you know, that twist. And it did work for me. I thought it was a nice way of just, you know, wrapping up the story without it being too predictable, because you know that eventually they're going to have to get the three segments. It's got to happen. But it was a nice way of just keeping you on the edge of your seat of what they're going to do. So that was good as well.
Yes, no, I agree. And we almost had like a bit of a remember in Blink we had a Sally Sparrow kind of thing, where letters had been written, like, you know, her friend that got taken back in time by the Weeping Angel.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it almost had that kind of feel to it, didn't it? Where the granddaughter of the girl that Sarah Jane was knocking around with, she turns up later and she's like, "Oh yeah, I was told to bring it here, and expect some strange things and all that stuff." So that was very... That felt very Sarah Janey, Doctor Who-y to me. Yeah. That was really cool. But I think, yeah, so in terms of the overall theme to the story, I think, I think you're absolutely right, mate. It's it's definitely more adult-y and mature. And but the thing for me that kept it quite sort of science fiction-y, very suited to CBBC, was... this character, the shopkeeper, and what he was about, really, because that was very much like, oh, a time hole and stuff like that. And the way he's got like an air of mystery around him, hasn't he? I think there is a bit of history to that character, which has never been confirmed by anybody, but there is a little bit of history that this character is actually a Time Lord called the Corsair. And so we've seen that character, or we've heard about that character. So in the episode, the Matt Smith episode, The Doctor's Wife, that one, you know, the those two people that are on that planet that the Doctor arrives on.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So the guy had one of his arms had a circular tattoo, and it's mentioned that. That's the arm of the Corsair, which is a Time Lord, which is a Time Lord that the Doctor knew very well.
All right.
Yeah. So, but there was a Neil Gaiman put this very small piece together in this book, The Brilliant Book of 2012, and it was 11 things you probably didn't know about the Corsair. I assume when he was doing his research for his episode, which was The Doctor's Wife. Anyway, showed it to Russell, and Russell thought that actually, yeah, I know no one's actually said it out loud, but I think that the shopkeeper character is the Corsair, because the Corsair had a scarlet macaw named Captain, and he wore a person of colour, and was pictured, and with a blue and yellow macaw in a very similar way that the shopkeeper was. So. Based on some of that stuff, we can quite confidently assume that this character, the shopkeeper, is actually a Time Lord.
That's pretty cool. I mean, there was me thinking it was the shopkeeper from Mr. Ben, but he just suddenly appeared. But yeah. No, I loved the character of the shopkeeper, because it's always intriguing when they know the Doctor and or Sarah Jane in this case straight away. And Sarah Jane doesn't know how he knows her. He's like, how do you know who I am? And all this. So there's this instant mystery around him. And he's got this parrot that's, you get the feeling there's more to the parrot than meets the eye, which it turns out there is. But it was good. Yeah, I really liked that character. And I, at first, was sad that by the time the story ended, he just vanishes. We don't get to find out a lot about him. But then I thought, oh, he's probably going to come back, isn't he? That's why he's they're just setting him up. But it's weird that we're getting to the end of series four and they choose to do that, because you'd think they might do that early on in the series, like maybe at the start of this series, and then bring him back for the final. So it's a little bit odd that we're getting this really intriguing new character as we're getting to the end of series four. I assume they had plans for this character and he was going to return. I don't know if we see him again.
I haven't seen.
No, I haven't seen
the
it.
Episode. No. So he does come back, but
oh, good.
The initial intention was him to come back for the series five finale,
right?
Which would have been called the Battle for Bannerman Road. So he was meant to come back then, but obviously, events being what they were, so he does come back in series five, but. As our listeners will know, I've not seen any Sarah Jane before, so I'm coming into all of it fresh. But I do know that he does come back, albeit quite briefly.
I guess I get the feeling it's a cameo rather than like a proper story with him. I don't know. I haven't seen it either. Yeah. I'm glad he's back. God, I'm kind of sad already, though, that we didn't get that series five, you know, couldn't be finished, because it sounds like it would have really tied things up nicely. I'm sort of really excited about series five, but also kind of dreading it. I don't know how I'm going to feel by the time we get to series five, because I don't know how they wrap it up or what they do. A great character and really nicely played by Cyril Neary.
Cyril Neary. Yep.
Yeah, he's nice performance from him. Yeah, he's playing it sort of. He's got that nice balance of being sinister and comedic all rolled into one without going over the top, you know. I really liked his performance. I love the look of him as well, the sort of shopkeeper get-up they've given him. It really suits him. But yeah, really good. I mean, I just love the way he can switch from being all nice and charming to, like I said, that moment where he's like, unfortunately, you don't have a choice. 3, 2, 1, cool, you're in the void. And they're like, wow, what happened there? You know, moments like that. Very, very good character. Very, very nice performance from him.
Well, that was one of the cool things about this story, really, is that you're on the roller coaster before you've had a chance to think about whether you actually want to do it or not. So it was really cool. So they go into the shop and he's like, right, this is a situation. Bish, bash, bosh. And
you're
then off you go. Yeah. So that was very cool. And he was very good. He provided that. I can imagine a lot of kids were like, oh, this is amazing. This little mysterious character that sent them back to these different time zones. And is he a baddie? Is he a goodie? What's going on? Yeah, it's very cool.
And the whole egg timer thing.
Sand timer,
it was a nice idea. The only thing is I kind of felt like when that ran out, it ran out a bit too soon. So that sort of almost, the sand timer runs out sort of very early on in episode two, which kind of took the danger away a bit, because I thought that whole thing was that they've got to get back before that runs out, and wasn't quite sure why they did that, to be honest, because it didn't seem to have any sort of consequence, unless that's the reason that they couldn't shut the time vortex at the end. I don't know. Wasn't too sure about that particular element, because I like the idea of like this sand timer, you know, they've got to get back before the sand timer runs out, and I assumed they'd get there just as the last grain dropped. But that kind of goes out the window early on in episode two, which I thought was sort of a bit of a waste of a good idea, really.
Yeah, and there's no real explanation as to why the time loop didn't start collapsing. And
no, I'm glad you said that, because I did wonder if I'd missed, because I was a bit like, well, why is that not? There was quite a big thing around that they got to get back before it was. So I was a bit unsure why it was kind of glossed over. Oh, well, that's all right. It seems to be fine.
I'll tell
you one thing, though. Didn't you think the effects looked good for the time?
Oh, very
like
good.
The time vortex looked really, I mean, it's quite a simple effect. It's nothing amazing, but there's a bit where it sort of shards into almost like bits of glass. Mm-hmm. I can't quite remember what the scene was, but I thought, blimey, that looks good. That looks really, really good. Mm-hmm. What year would this have been? 2010.
Yeah.
So yeah, 11 years ago. Yeah, I just thought it was a, you know, as I said, the whole production in this story for me was good. So the effects were good. There's not hardly any CGI in it, probably just that. The costumes of, you know, like the period costumes, like the Nazi outfits and Lady Jane, all the stuff back in that era. All the production just looked beautiful, like really, really well produced. So yeah, and as I said, it didn't look dated at all. This could have been made like literally yesterday. It just looked like a really well produced piece of television. Yeah. I think that location looked familiar. Actually, the house, I kept expecting a Slovene to run past. I'm sure that's the bit. There's like these arch bits in the wall. I'm sure that was used as Downing Street or something. I might be wrong, but the location looked a bit familiar. The one that Sarah Jane was in. I think that might have been in a Slovene app or something. But yeah, just the whole production was great, I thought. And it's really, really well produced. By producer was Brian Minchin, mm-hmm. which, of course, he did a lot of stuff in the Capaldi era, didn't he, I think?
Yes, did loads on Who.
Yeah, Phil Ford co-produced it again. Yep. Yeah, good old Phil. I like Phil Ford.
Yes. Yeah, no, I thought the effect for the time hole was really, really well done.
Very good, Very good.
Okay, so out of the three, let's rattle through the three different, because the story doesn't overlap at all. Really,
no,
apart from the beginning and the end. So the three sort of subplots, I guess, outside of the time hole and the shopkeeper and stuff like that. The first one, so we've spoken very briefly about Clyde. Let's just wrap up on that one. So for me, the Clyde story was the best of the three.
Yes, it's the one I liked. Yeah, best.
Purely because I thought that Daniel Anthony, like you said earlier, he just really had a belter of a, because he does have really good performances most of the time when he gets stuff to do, but on one hand they try to write him as a bit of a Han Solo character, where he does play the hero for sure, but he's very cocky and throwing one-liners and all that stuff.
Yeah,
whereas in this one it was a lot more, he took umbrage really quickly at what was happening in the village. And there's just a series of events that just really, you can just tell that he's getting more and more miffed with what's going on. So like he kind of drifts in and out of, right, I'm here to get the Chronosteel. I need to get this item, bring it back to present time. But at the same time, I'm really annoyed that there's Nazis around, you know, like he said, they've resorted to name calling, and he gives these nice little speeches and stuff. And there's a nice little twist as well. There's a bit where him and George, they escape from the Nazis. They leg off down the village, and they come across one of the school teachers, I think she is. And she's like, oh, no, this won't do. You know, follow me. I've got a gun. You know, we'll sort them out, sort of thing. And it turns out that she's a traitor. She's a spy for the Nazis. And that's like, oh, God, like, what's going to happen? So I thought Clyde's story was the best of the three, purely because I thought the twist was really good. It had like a, it was almost like an old classic McCoy adventure, Clyde story. It just had like a little bit of action, a couple of guns here and there, a twist in there and stuff like that. So I really like Clyde's version or part of the story, should I say, just because Daniel Anthony had a belter, I reckon.
Yeah, I think, well, what he showed, I mean, Clyde often is written to be the sort of, he's the sort of character you'd expect to mess up, and he'd be the one that normally would end up going back without the key and stuff. But in this one, he really is given some great moments, and he's not written as the fool. You know, he's written it really strong in this story. I mean, the bit where he pretends his phone is a bomb is great, and it starts playing that music. And obviously back then, they wouldn't have seen anything like that. So it totally works. And it was a fun moment, but also a really good moment. But as I said earlier, the speech he gives as well to the Nazis, where he really tells them, gives them what for before making his escape. I just thought Daniel Anthony just went on to show that he's more than just the comedy sidekick that he's often written in some stories. He's, you know, he's a really fully formed character that, you know, like you said, has matured into, you know, this, the character of Clyde, that he's able to deal with these situations. And I just thought it was great. And he bounces very nicely off this George character that is introduced as well, who also gives a very nice performance. Sometimes when you get a side character and he's quite a young chap as well, you know, sometimes the acting can be a bit, you know, place, you know, like drama school, you know. He's really good. Who's the guy who played George? Richard Whisker. Just a very good performance, you know, very believable. Him and Daniel work really well together in this story. They give a really nice performance because he's got to play that sort of wartime child, you know, bit sort of, I wouldn't say cockney, but you know what I mean? He's got to give that sort of typical performance, and he does it really well without going over the top. The guy who plays George, they're really good together, those two. So yeah, I agree. I was very invested in that particular story and the little twists and turns and stuff. Yeah.
No, I agree, mate. Yeah, Richard Whisker. No, he was good. And they had some good banter between them, because I think when they first see each other, he's not quite sure, is he? Because George is very preoccupied with keeping an eye on the Nazis who have just landed on the beach. And Clyde's just trying to figure out what the hell's going on. But they do kind of coalesce and sort of get their act together very quickly. And they're a good little team. Yeah, so I like Clyde's story. He goes back the furthest, I would say. Rani goes back the furthest. But so Clyde, he ended up going back to Norfolk, 1941. And then we have Rani's story. So she goes back the furthest. She goes back to the Tower of London in July of 1553 to Lady Jane Grey. And she gets confused very quickly as a lady in waiting, but she makes friends really quickly with Lady Jane. And she kind of immediately warms to Rani and stuff like that. And I think she refers to her later on as, because she vanishes before, don't you? Once she gets the dagger, which is the Krona Steel, she gets zapped back to current time. And I think someone else is like, oh, shit, this is witchcraft. And Lady Jane's like, nah, she was an angel sort of thing looking after me. So although the story doesn't end very nicely for Lady Jane, I think, at the very end, Rani looks up some history notes about her. And apparently she was you know, happy in her final moments because she's going to be executed for treason or being a traitor.
Yeah.
And which is why, so Lady Matilda, she wants to murder her so she can be sort of killed, you know, sort of thing. So, and Rani obviously stops that. So Rani's one wasn't too bad. I really liked Angeli's performance, much like Daniel Anthony's, but the storyline itself just didn't quite grip me as much as the other ones. But still not a bad performance from her, though.
No, I know what you mean. I liked the Rani story, but mainly because I'd never heard of Lady Jane Grey, I'm afraid. I didn't know. So that it just introduced me to a bit of history, and I thought it was done really nicely. It was just taught me something I didn't know about history, about this queen who was queen for 9 days. I mean, never heard about any of this. So I just thought it was educational without being too obvious or ramming it down my throat. Or it was just a nice little storyline to say, oh, there was this queen once that was queen for 9 days. I thought, oh, wow. No, I didn't know anything about that. So I found it interesting in that sense. And I thought it was a nice story for Rani. You know, I think she worked really well. The person playing the queen gave a great performance, really beautifully understated performance from her as well. This is what I mean. The supporting cast seemed to be so into this. Like, there was nobody that was giving a half-assed performance. Everybody seems to be really into their character. Like, the who was playing the Queen? Amber Beattie,
yeah.
You know, just she's looked at that and thought, gosh, I'm playing a really historic, important figure here. Right, I've got to do this. Everyone just taking it so seriously. I loved it. I just really sort of wanted to just give the supporting cast a pat on the back. I thought everybody was just so good in it. In terms of their performance. But yeah, I know what you mean. It maybe not the most gripping of the three storylines, because the peril was different in that one. It's more about Rani, you know, saving the queen, but there's not as much danger or excitement in that particular storyline. But it was nice. I still liked it. It was a nice one for Rani.
Yeah. And you can tell Rani was a bit emotional as well at the end. She formed a bit of an attachment to her. So yeah. And then we had the third and final piece of the puzzle, I suppose, which is Sarah Jane. So in some respects you could call this a bit of a Sarah Jane light story, not quite as light, Sarah, light as what was the episode that we did recently with the two robots?
I can't remember what it's called.
You know what I mean? The Empty Planet. Yeah. The Empty Planet.
The Empty Planet, yeah.
Which was a Sarah Light story.
I'm guessing this is when Liz was maybe getting ill, though, is it? Is that why she's not in it so much?
I'm not quite sure, mate, because it doesn't... There's no information on that.
No, I'm just assuming that might be why she's not been in it as much, because we're getting to the end of Series 4, and then we know she didn't get to finish Series 5. So I could be completely wrong, but I'm just assuming maybe... there was things behind the scenes causing that.
But we don't get any info on that.
No.
But I wouldn't say it's like a full-on Sarah Jane-like story, but it is. She doesn't have that bigger part. In fact, I would say that Clyde and Rani have slightly larger parts.
Their
stories seem to be a bit more in-depth and take on a bit more screen time than hers. But hers was still quite nice. And like I said earlier, probably one of the darker, like the darkest of the three stories, and her, each of them seems to have their own sort of buddy when they got to their own respective time zones. And Sarah, she teams up with is it Gwyneth?
It's Emily, isn't it?
Is it Emily?
I think it's Emily. She meets a girl, Emily Morris.
Emily Morris, yeah, of course, yeah, sorry, yeah, played by Gwyneth Keyworth. I got the name wrong, yeah. So Emily, she seemed quite sweet. She was, and it's really nice, like we mentioned earlier, that she has that, that she's the one that saves the day, I suppose. She passes the letters down to her granddaughter and stuff like that. So, but it was an intriguing kind of little side story in that. I think they tried to start it out as a ghost story, because Emily can hear the voices and Sarah Jane can hear them and all that stuff. And it turns out it's kind of echoes, isn't it, from the future?
Yeah.
So a bit of a twisty one, that one. But still enjoyable, though.
What did you think of Emily? Because I think if there was one character I'd single out as perhaps not as good as the rest, and it's more that the fact that the rest are so good, she's probably the weaker of the three the people that they get paired up with. So as I said, George is great, gives a good performance. The Queen, great performance. Emily, she's a little bit whiny. I mean, as I said, normally I don't think she'd stand out as being the worst by any means, but out of the three, she's probably, because she's playing that sort of, you know, she doesn't sort of understand what's going on. She's from a different time period. And yeah, so she's probably, if you had to be cruel, she's probably the weaker of the three companions they get set up with. But she's still good. She still gives a really nice performance, Gwyneth Keyworth. And I just love the fact that Sarah Jane's so strong in this situation. So you've got Emily freaking out about ghosts, and Sarah Jane's just having none of it, is she? She's like, oh, don't be silly. Why do you keep banging on about ghosts for? And she's like, come on, let's go upstairs and find out what's going on. And this is what I love about Sarah Jane. She just gets stuck in. She's never phased. She just wants to solve the mystery. And there is a nice moment when she's almost sort of not having a go, but she says to Emily, doesn't she, why are you so obsessed with ghosts for? And Emily's like, oh, because my mum passed away and I just don't want to, and it sort of knocks Sarah Jane back a little bit, doesn't it? She's like, oh, sorry, I didn't really, you know, I wouldn't have known, I didn't know that sort of thing. So there's a nice moment between the two of them then, but yeah, still a good pairing, still a good performance from both, obviously. But
yeah, that is still good. And and Gwyneth, Gwyneth Keyworth, she did go on to do, so Sarah Jane was one of her first acting jobs back in 2010. Oh, right, okay. But she has gone on to do things like Misfits, Game of Thrones, Plebs, Black Mirror, The Crown, that sort of thing. So she's gone on and done some decent stuff. But I kind of agree with you, though. She's probably, it's the wrong way to describe her as the weakest of the three companions, quote unquote. But she's got this sweetness about her in this that, and she really needs somebody like Sarah Jane as well.
Yeah.
And out of the three sort of subplots, I would say it's Clyde's, then Rani's, then Sarah Jane's for me. But they're all very, very close in terms of enjoying them. So, yeah. And then in Sarah Jane's one, to finish up, we have the they actually save the kids in the end. They manage to unlock the door, don't they? And they run out and So not a bad ending overall. And in the actual ending to the whole thing, like we went through earlier when we discussed the shopkeeper, it was very, very, although it was a little bit kind of, well, the time hole should have collapsed in on by itself now, by now and stuff like that. But it was kind of cool nonetheless. So, and then it finishes with Clyde realizing that George had gone on and joined the army and then was knighted. And
see, that's the bit I loved.
Yeah.
That's the bit I loved. Sarah Jane just pulling at the heartstrings again in a way that it does so well. Yeah, I love that, that Clyde then went and looked up George to see what, how he'd done. Because obviously, for all he knows, he could have been killed in the war or whatever. So that's, that was a lovely moment, I thought, when he looks him up to see what happened to him. And also, Rani looks up the Queen as well, Lady Jane, to see what happened to her. I was almost expecting there to be a little twist about Emily. You know, I thought, is she going to turn out to be someone that we didn't know? But there isn't. We don't really sort of find out. Her twist is that she gives the key to her, whoever it is, that granny that turns up at the end. So that's kind of her twist. But I was wondering if she was going to turn out to be someone more important. It would have been quite a nice little twist, I think, if Sarah Jane had looked up Emily Morris and said, oh, gosh, that was so-and-so. But, yeah, that doesn't happen.
But
that's a lovely ending, that. I think Clyde's bit particularly just pulled my heartstrings a little bit. I really liked that.
It did. And then just to finish off, the only thing I've got in my notes, I noticed a very tiny little line from Rani that suggests that she likes Clyde a little bit more than what she's told him. I think Lady Jane's says something about a male friend. I think back in that time, describing somebody as a male friend sort of thing was a bit more like a boyfriend sort of thing. And she's like, yeah, I do have a male friend, actually. And she says something like, but, you know, he's not going to drop in anytime soon or something like that. And then it cuts to Clyde and he's legging off with George and stuff. So they kind of progress that little tiny plot as well about those two ending up together in the future. So that was nice.
Yeah, I liked the fact that Clyde teases Rani about what she's wearing as well. Yeah. Again, it's a nice little Clyde comedy moment that, because there's not a lot of humour in this two-parter. It's quite a sort of serious story, but there are lovely moments in it. And that, again, is typical Clyde, that he's like, what are you wearing sort of thing. So that was a nice moment between Clyde and Rani right at the end.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
Have you got anything else on your notes, dude?
No, I haven't actually. No. I'm just looking through them now.
Okay. Right, scores then. I think it is me to go first. I think. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
An 8. Yeah. Okay. I'm slightly below you. 7.5 from me.
Okay, cool.
I thought it was very good. There was a slight fun element missing in terms of the sort of humour and stuff, which you normally get from Sarah Jane. But yeah, very good. And it's nice to have a story like this, to be honest. I don't say that as a negative. It was nice to have a more serious adult story in Sarah Jane. It worked very well. Yeah, I liked it.
Yes, no, it did. Okay, cool. And I gave it an 8 because it was just a really engaging watch for me. So although, like you said, it didn't have the sort of fun and frolics of a typical SJA episode, it was very, it was just really engaging to me, like really well written, very, very good performances. I think the performances more than anything are what really puts the score up for me. And I really like the character of the shopkeeper.
Yes. Really, yeah.
Just very, very good stuff. So. Okay, the 7.5 from him.
Just before you go on, I was going to say, just you saying very, very well written, I just wanted to say I don't know the writer, Rupert Late.
Rupert Late, yeah, not much has been.
I don't even, it's just not a name. When it came up on screen, I just thought, who is it? I've not heard that name much, but yeah, I don't know if he's done other Sarah Janes or if this is his only one, but interesting.
Even looking on Wiki,
I can't find much about him. But
yeah, I know he wrote another Sarah Jane story.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. I think it might have been The Gift.
Oh, right.
Was it The Gift? I think he wrote that as well. And but he's not a very well-known writer, I don't think. I don't know his name.
No, it didn't mean anything when his name came up. I did sort of think, oh, him again. Yeah, but yeah, a very good script from him.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, right, 8 from me, 7.5 for for Adam. Let's see what our awesome listeners think. Let's kick off. First of all, a regular reviewer from Down Under. This is Sammy Satine.
G'day, Gary and Adam. Sammy Satine here. So lost in time, it seems strange to me that a parrot and his friend slash servant can have such authority and power as to demand and force Sarah Jane and her friends to do their bidding. I have trouble understanding how a key and a dagger could be out of time in the time periods they are in, but perhaps I missed something. I also find it interesting that Clyde somehow manages to escape from the Nazis without having his skin colour brought up. You certainly learned a bit about Lady Jane and a little about the Nazis, maybe enough for some curious children watching to look them up, though I'm not sure how much exposure the target audience should have to these parts of history, given they might not be old enough to fully comprehend the events that happened. Anyway, it was good. I give it 6 time windows out of 10. See ya.
A 6 from Sammy.
A 6, and they do bring up Clyde's skin colour, don't they? That's what I was saying about the some of the language used was I thought was quite strong for a CBB show.
No, they did do that stuff, Sammy. I'm not sure I agree on the target audience and not really getting what's going on. I mean, yeah. Anyways, but a 6 from Sammy. Thank you very much. Moving on, this is Mr. Joe Turner.
When I was younger, Lost in Time was without a doubt my favourite SJA story. I just love how he has 3 separate Avengers going on at once. I also find it to be quite a bleak episode at times as well, because there's lots of adult themes, which is shown in the exchange between Clyde and the Nazi lieutenant when he makes a prejudiced remark, along with the kids whose room has been set on fire. Each scenario was unique. Clyde was caught up in an action-packed hostage situation, and I really felt he portrayed a real competent performance in his ability to command the scene and using his initiative, and a twist with the school teacher gave me a shock I needed to keep entertained. Meanwhile, Ryan is caught up in a tragedy with Lady Jane Grey, who is caught up in a conflict of power not of her own doing. Ryan and Jane have a great chemistry, and I found their scenes a pause the episode needed, whilst educating me on a part of history I never knew much about. Even though I found Sarah's trip into the past a little bit stop-start at times, I did find the scenes with the ghost quite tense, and I loved the ending, how Emily's granddaughter brings the key to the shop to stop the time corridor. I would have loved to have seen more of Ryan's time period, however, in the 16th century, as it was limited to only a few sets, and I would love to have seen an answer to who that man in the shop was, as he's a real interesting character, and I loved the scenes he was in. Finally, the score was brilliant, and I loved how they tie up George's character by the end, telling us he joined the army age 16 soon after meeting Clyde. Overall, I'd give this episode a 9.5 out of 10. Thank you.
9.5 from Joe.
9.5. Wow, that is high, isn't it? Good.
Yeah, very high. Yeah, thank you very much, Joe. And I think one thing I do agree with you on, mate, is the stuff with Rani. It would have been cool to see a little bit more, because if you think about it, most of it was set just in one room the whole time, wasn't it? Or a couple of rooms. Which I think might have been Caerphilly Castle.
I'm sure, I was going to say, I'm sure I spotted that fireplace.
That fireplace, yeah.
Somehow the one that I never got to see.
Yeah, so it would have been cool for that story to branch out a wee bit. So a 9.5 though from Joe, very cool.
Yeah.
Right, moving on, this is TARDISnet 66.
Lost in Time was one of my favourite stories of the Sarah Jane Adventures. And I'm not sure how everyone else feels about it, but I really do love it. Because I think what works about this story is that it succeeds where a lot of other stories with a similar concept of going between different locations and time periods often fail, as it has an inherent focus in what the story is trying to do and what it's trying to achieve. And it feels like it has high stakes and really compelling drama, as I think the shopkeeper is a really compelling character with a lot of mystery and ambiguity. And I also think it has a lot of compelling historical drama in the individual relationships, with the relationship between Rani and Lady Jane Grey, Clyde and George, and Sarah Jane and Emily. And it has some great twists and turns along the way, with George's teacher turning out to be a traitor, and the great twist at the end. It's a really great story.
Cool.
Yes, very good. Yeah, I agree about the twists and turns, how it all comes together, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it is a very good story, actually. When you think about it as those 3 individual stories and how it comes together, it is a very well-written story, this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much, TARDISnet. And lastly, this is Owen Daly.
Hello. So, Lost in Time. Coming to the end of the Sarah Jane Adventures, which is quite a shame, but it's going out on a high these last few episodes. And Lost in Time proves Ortiz's point in the past that, you know, children aren't stupid. They'll be able to process much more intricate stories, which is great, because this story definitely is that. It could pass Doctor Who or Torchwood in my mind. And the subplots are great, especially the Nazi one with Clive. Daniel Anthony proves that he is the strongest actor in the series, in my opinion. I've always loved Clive, but I think Clyde, and I think this just proves his acting chops. And it's a shame that the series had to come to such an abrupt end, because you could see Anjali Mahindra and Daniel Anthony really coming into their own as the young actors. Overall, just I like it, and I really wish the shopkeeper guy kind of cropped up again. I know he's meant to, and even in Class, I wonder if he was going to play the same character. But I'll give it a, you know, it's an 8 out of 10. It's a solid Sarah Jane adventure story. Also, just thank you. I've been working lots of long, boring work shifts recently, and I dipped back into the podcast for the first time in quite a while. So thank you for keeping me entertained. You're doing great, and I'm looking forward to listening in the new year. So take care, and thank you.
No worries, Owen. Thank you very much, dude.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, so an 8 from Owen. Yeah, and I think you summed up nicely. It's a solid Sarah Jane story. And yeah, and I also agree that it's... I think we should give younger people more credit than saying that they wouldn't be able to understand or get what was going on. I think, you know, if anything, it probably prompted a few of them to go and look up what these characters, especially Lady Jane and stuff like that. So... yeah, I agree with you very much so, Owen. And thank you for dipping back into the podcast, dude. It's great to have you back. So those were the audio clips. Thank you very much, guys, for sending those in. We had a few over on the socials, over on Twitter. Jordan Shortman, one of our writers, says, a really good episode. It was nice to learn more about Lady Jane Grey. And those scenes felt a lot like a Hartnell story, especially with how tragic she was in real life. The shopkeeper is an interesting character that has lots of potential. A good, fun story. Chippy T says, Sally Sparrow got letters and photos from the past, which reminded me of the ending here. Cracking stuff. RTD magically weaves three stories into 50 minutes and it doesn't seem rushed at all. Pity we never got to find out who the shopkeeper was. Dan Pin says, my favourite SJA, love this one. Three superb plots, which could have been stories in their own rights, expertly weaved together and a Blink-style conclusion. Love Clyde and George as a double act. I wonder how the shopkeeper story would have unfolded. A 9.5.
Yeah. I wish we... yeah, it'd be nice to find out. But.
Yes, yeah. And lastly, on Twitter, Sarah Louise, the running Whovian, says, a beautiful, multifaceted story full of mystery, history and passion. Amazing emotional performances, particularly from the younger members who I feel the Doctor Who TARDIS team could learn something from. Love the final scene with the key being returned so many years later. A 10 out of 10 from Sarah.
Sarah, loving it.
Yes. And we had just one over on Facebook. Chloe Anderson says, I really like this episode, despite not having the means to rewatch it. I especially like the ending as it shows the real extent of time travel when Emily's granddaughter presents the key to Sarah Jane, similar to Blink in Series 3 of Doctor Who.
Indeed. And talking of not being able to find it to rewatch it, it's taken me the whole podcast. But I finally found my friend's message she sent me. She found it on Amazon Prime, she tells me. She said, I found it on Amazon Prime and I should be watching it from the start. So I don't know. I don't have Amazon Prime. I didn't realise Sarah Jane was on it, but that's what she says. So I don't know. Have a look.
Okay. Yeah. So it's probably definitely on there. It's definitely on Amazon Prime, but I'm not sure if you have to pay for it.
Oh, you probably do. Yeah,
maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think cool, you though. Do, mate. Yeah, but that's where it is. If anyone's got Amazon Prime,
read you. Let me just have a quick looky. Sarah Jane Adventionos in Prime Video. Yeah, you have to buy them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they're all on there, which is cool. Yeah, go and pick it up if online is your thing. You can buy the entire season for £5 each. So not too bad.
No, worth it. Definitely worth
it. Definitely worth it, yeah. Rightio, that's going to wrap for our review this week. Next week, bud, what are we on to for next week?
Next week, so the fourth Doctor with a story called Terror of the Zygons. Wow.
The Zygons.
Zygons. Terror of the Zygons next week.
Yes, dude, I think I watched this one just before Crimbo.
Did you?
I think, yeah. So, yeah, I'm kind of up to speed on the old Zygons, the old Zygonian. So, yeah, but I obviously we'll rewatch it for the review next week. But, yeah, back to old Tom for next week. It's going to be good.
Yes.
So I think we'll wrap there, dude. Let's call it there for episode 295.
All righty.
Thank you so much for coming back and listening to another episode of the Big Blue Box podcast. It's been great to have you here for another week. Those of you that have just jumped on board and have started listening to the show, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming on board. To those of you that have listened for a long time, the old time, the old grizzled ancients, welcome back. It's good to have you for another week. Next week, as Adam said, we're going back to the Fourth Doctor era for Terror of the Zygons. So get your DVDs or your BritBox fired up and get that watched, because we'll be asking for your thoughts and reviews as always for that one. In the meantime, head over to our website, bigbluebookspodcast.co.uk. You can listen to all of our episodes on there. Or if you want to listen to us on your podcast apps, just do a search for us, or there are links on the website. And we are on the socials too, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can link off on the website, or you can just do a search for The Big Blue Box. You'll find us on there. Come and give us a like and a follow. We chat Doctor Who throughout the week. We have a free Discord server as well. There's a link on the website to that. Basically, everything you need is on the website, is the probably the best way to put it. But yeah, there's a link on the website. Come and join the Discord. Come and hang out and chat Doctor Who with other Doctor Who fans. It's all very cool over there. And if you've got a minute to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever you want to call it, that would be awesome, because that really helps us out lots and lots. And thank you to our recent reviewers on there. You've left some lovely reviews on there, so thank you very much. And lastly, remember to check out my co-host channel over on YouTube. It is The Geek's Handbag.
Yes, indeed. Go and have a look at some of my vids. And I'm also on all the socials. Love the socials. Well, most of them. I've been doing a lot of Insta Live videos lately. I enjoy doing those.
Yes, you have. They've been very cool, actually.
Yeah, I've enjoyed those.
Yeah, so go and follow Adam. Go and subscribe to his YouTube channel. Loads and loads of cool geekery shenanigans going on over there. And he's on the socials too, like he said. So go and follow and just join in. All of us talking about Doctor Who and sci-fi and TV and all sorts of rubbish, really.
Yeah.
Yes. So come and join in with that. So next week for episode 296, we will cover whatever news is happening in the world of Doctor Who, as always, plus our review of Terror of the Zygons. So until next week, please stay safe and healthy. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And remember...